Welcome to How Leaders Lead. I'm Kula Callahan, here to bring you another edition of Three More Questions with David Novak. David, it's so great to be back with you. We've got a really fun conversation today. Are you ready for it?
Absolutely, and I can't wait to talk about the conversation I had with Matt Doherty, the author of a great book called Rebound, and he was a former head basketball coach at Notre Dame in North Carolina, and a guy who has learned so much about leadership and is now coaching other leaders on how to be the best that they can be.
I loved this interview you did with Matt. He is so authentic, but he's also quite vulnerable. As you'll hear, David, in some of the questions that I'll ask you, his time as a basketball coach wasn't necessarily easy. And as you so eloquently put it in the interview, he kind of got screwed at one point in his career, but he talks about it with such grace and vulnerability, and his entire story of going from being a head basketball coach to being an executive coach is one that is a story of redemption, I believe, and one that gives everyone else opportunity to rewrite their career when it goes in a direction that you never thought it would. And so I think you'll love this episode. If you haven't listened to it, certainly go back and give it a listen, especially since we're coming up on the March Madness tournament. It'll be a fascinating interview for you to kick off that fun season of basketball.
You know, Matt never really said that he got screwed, but I kind of think that he did. And I try to put those words in his mouth during the interview. And then why did I feel this way? He went to Notre Dame, turned that program around in a year. He did a phenomenal job there. They were going to offer him a long-term contract. Then North Carolina comes back and they lure him back to his alma mater so that he can become the head basketball coach there. You know, he left a guaranteed long-term contract, trusted North Carolina that they'd give him a great contract or they'd take care of him because they were so-called family. And he goes there, becomes the NCAA Coach of the Year, and did exactly what he told them was going to happen in the second year, which is they would not do well because the cupboard was bare on recruiting. Doesn't win 20 games the last year, but wins his third year, but wins 19. And then he asks his athletic director to come in and give him a little vote of confidence. And he doesn't go in. The athletic director, you know, basically comes back and tells him, boy, you're in real trouble. You're real tough. And you know, my belief is he really wanted to get Roy Williams, and then he found a way to get him. And as a result, you know, Matt was fired, basically got this reputation of being too tough on his players, the same reputation that helped him turn around Notre Dame, the same reputation that helped him become the NCAA Coach of the Year. And he's out, okay? And he gets sort of a weak exit package. And, you know, he really, you know, went from the top of college basketball to Florida Athletic University, which has become a Final Four team in recent years, and SMU, which has had its ups and downs. But, you know, it wasn't exactly North Carolina. But he gave up a gem of a job at Notre Dame to go into North Carolina, and didn't work out for him. And, you know, one of the things I really believe is that when you get fired and you don't get coached first, that's the cardinal sin of leadership. I think that the people deserve to be, unless you steal, loot, do something terrible in a company, I think people should be coached first before you let them go. He didn't get that opportunity. And that's why I think he really kind of got screwed. But he's moved beyond it. And, you know, I didn't get that from him. That's my take.
Well, he talks about that experience with just deep grace for himself and for the people involved. And I think that that's a mark of someone who has done a lot of work on themselves and can really see how their hardships have opened the door for great success. David, I'm excited to get into these questions for today's episode. Let's get going. Question number one. One of Matt's superpowers during his time as a college basketball coach was recruiting. To be a great recruiter, he says, number one, you have to make it personal. Number two, you have to ask questions. And number three, you have to control what you can control. David, what other advice do you have for leaders who are recruiting in very competitive industries?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You know, one coach that I know very well is Coach John Calipari. And another coach that I know very well is Rick Pitino. And they both talked to me about recruiting. And they said where people really make the biggest mistakes is you go then, you tell them your story, you tell them why you're so great, but you don't take time to really understand where the recruit or the talent that you're looking for is coming from, what's on their minds, what's on their parents' minds, and really listen to them. And then tell them your story in the context that makes it relevant to them. And that's a huge mistake that people make. You know, you're so internal. You just can't wait to tell everybody how great your company is, but you don't really understand what the person that you're trying to recruit is really thinking and how you can make your company or your team relevant to them. Now, the other thing that I think is very, very important when you're really trying to go for talent and you find that person that's really great, blow them away. Don't just tell them about your company like everybody else. Find a way to let them know that you want them more than anybody else. Blow them away. Send them a funny note. Break through the clutter in some way. Call their spouse or their partner and tell them why you think that person is so great and you can't wait to have them join them. But blow them away. I mean, listen, the most important thing you can do is get great people. So how do you blow them away so that they can't wait to come work for you? Don't treat this as a normal standard operating procedure. That is absolute BS. This is the most important thing you do. Everybody always says people come first. You got to have great people around you. I couldn't do anything without my team. Well, if that's the case, what are you doing to make sure that you bring in the very best people? How are you blowing these people away? And I really believe that you got to be highly involved as a leader. And then you make sure that whoever you're trying to recruit sees what you have and what the company has and what your team has in its very, very best light. I mean, you want to give these people an incredible snow job. I mean, you want these people to walk away saying, I can't believe these people. I can't believe the culture. I mean, this place is so different than any place I want. You know, I want these people. And I'll tell you, we did that at Yum Brands. And I'll tell you, I did that with every key person that I wanted to bring in the organization.
David, that fires me up. And if you haven't listened to the episode with Matt yet, he's got a hilarious story about how he makes his recruits feel like they're the only person in the world. So definitely go back and give that episode a listen. I'll give you a little teaser. It involves an air sickness bag on an airplane. And that's all I'm going to say, but you have to listen to the episode to hear his recruiting stories. Question number two. During Matt's first year coaching in North Carolina, what he thought the team needed was accountability and toughness. And since they had been pretty successful up until that point, he had a difficult time injecting that accountability and toughness into their culture. That change was very hard for him to implement. Now, Matt says that managing change is an art form. David, what advice do you have for leaders who are managing change within their organizations?
If you really want to make change, you have to convince people that they're going to get a lot more pain if they don't do it than pleasure. All decisions are made on the basis of pain and pleasure. So if you think you can keep moving along and have a pleasant experience, you're not going to change. If you're going to really drive change in an organization, you got to create a burning platform. You know, a burning platform where people know they've got to change in order to survive or to thrive or to grow a business. You know, the burning platform story is you're on a ship, you know, you climb all the way to the top of the ship, the flames are all around you, there's an icy Antarctic ocean out there. You know, what's the only way that you're going to survive? You got to jump off that burning platform and move into something else. And, you know, you don't know a lot of times if you're going to survive when you jump off that burning platform, but you know sure as hell if you don't, you're going to burn. And, you know, I think leaders have got to create a burning platform and let people know that there's going to be a lot more pain if you don't make this change than pleasure. And everything boils down to that. It's very difficult to drive change if people don't think there needs to be change. And if there really isn't a need to change, then why are you driving it? And in this particular situation with Matt, he went to North Carolina and they had a storied tradition and they were pretty happy with the results that they'd had. And they didn't see that change was necessary. So one of the mistakes that he did is he went in there and tried to change something that people didn't really understand the need to change. And he didn't take the time to really get people on board with why that change was necessary. And that's why he lost a lot of momentum there in a hurry.
David, I also think it goes back to something we talk about often in these Three More Questions episodes, and that is taking people with you. If you don't get inside the minds of the people that you're leading when you are trying to implement a change, it's going to be pretty dadgum hard to get them to go with you and make the change that you're suggesting the organization make.
Absolutely. So what's question number three, Kula?
Question number three. When Matt took over as head coach of UNC, his predecessor, Dean Smith, was technically retired, but in reality, he was still kind of always lurking around in the background of their operation. How should a leader handle the relationship with their predecessor when he or she is still very much involved in the organization they're running?
You really got to understand that great leaders hear the unsaid. One of the things that Dean Smith did with Matt Doherty was he told him that's your program. He said, you do what you want to have. Now, meanwhile, this guy was a storied coach, and he didn't really listen to what was really being told to him. He didn't hear the unsaid. He didn't hear the fact that Dean Smith thought he was North Carolina basketball. And if you think you're going to come in there and he still has an office in the building, and you're not going to have to give him some sort of homage, and you can go about doing your job the way how you want to do it, that is a formula for disaster. And I think the lesson that Matt learned is that you got to involve predecessors like that, and you got to embrace them, and you need to use them in a way that serves you and your team. You need to control your destiny, because you can't go off on an island and think that it's all yours now. Because it's not. You're kidding yourself. Dean Smith's still around. He's still alive. He still cares about North Carolina. And you think it's totally your show? Probably not. Even though Dean Smith said it's your show. No, the unsaid was, yeah, it's your show, but don't forget about me. And he did. And he did some things that irritated him. And as a result, when it came time to have an ally, when it came time to have someone cover his back, he wasn't the guy that was really going to do it.
You know, David, we're recording this interview a few months after Nick Saban announced his retirement. And I believe that the man they hired to replace Nick Saban, Kalen DeBoer from the University of Washington, he's been embraced by the Alabama fans, of which I am one. He's been embraced by them. And I think part of that is because in all of Kalen DeBoer's press conferences and all of his media interviews, he talks about the legacy of Nick Saban and how he plans on continuing to learn from him as he takes over as head coach. And so hopefully that's not just lip service. But to your point, I mean, I think he is, quote, hearing the unsaid and recognizing that if he doesn't at least tell people that he's going to learn from Coach Saban, he's not going to get where he wants to be.
These people who take over jobs, people who have been enormously successful, and don't give them at least a little homage and respect by asking them their opinion, I think in a lot of cases they're heading for disaster unless they get incredible results from the beginning, and it just continues that way.
Well, that does it for our episode of Three More Questions for today. Thank you, David, and thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of How Leaders Lead. We're on a mission to make the world a better place by developing better leaders. And if you carve out a little time with us each and every week, we'll help you build the confidence you need to lead well.
And coming up next on How Leaders Lead is the Best of Quarter One episode. Can't believe this year is flying by, but it has happened. And this episode is great because it gives you the best of insights from all the incredible guests that we've had on the show in this past quarter. And it's like a How Leaders Lead highlight reel. And I can't wait for you to hear the one from this quarter. So be sure to tune in next week so you don't miss it.